Okay, today is September 25th. I am Troy Reeves, and we're going to let Caius introduce herself, but this is an oral history interview. This is our fifth session, I think, with Kaya, and we're talking, have been talking about the Capitol protests or the uprising. So Kaya, for sound quality purposes, could you say your name and spell your last name?
Mm-hmm. Kaya Rebane, spell my last name, R-E-B-A-N-E.
Thank you. It's a little soft, so... Okay, let's get a little closer to you.
I just scooted back so I could also... Yeah,
it should pick me up just fine, and it is, so okay. I'll just have to project a little bit.
Well, all right, we're just going to pick up.
Yeah, we're just going to pick up where we left off on the last session. Kaya has an outline that she's sort of been following, so yeah. Let's just pick up where we left off then.
Because I try to be organized like that. Sometimes to a fault. So last time around, I know that we stopped right before the kind of day of the crackdown, February 27th. So I'll just start there. So that was a Sunday, and. We had gotten word, I don't remember when word came, but it had basically been stated publicly that the Capitol was going to be cleared by 4 p.m., as I recall. And because I think Walker wanted us out in time for his budget address on Tuesday. So anyway, I'm not sure exactly when that word got out, but I remember that, you know, by at least early-ish on Sunday, we knew that, maybe before. And... So that day, sometime around midday, I don't remember exactly, but the first thing I remember was, I mean, I had been in the Capitol, and in a way I didn't want to leave because I was nervous about not being able to get back in, but I had agreed to speak at the People's Legislature, which was something being put on by Ed Garvey and kind of like the Fighting Bob, like Garvey's Fighting Bob. .org or whatever group, I think. And I think Mike McCabe from Wisconsin Democracy Campaign was involved too and was heading it up, but maybe I'm wrong about that. But anyway, it was definitely Ed Garvey and friends. And so anyway, this was this big gathering of hundreds of people over on the far east side in a hotel over there. And so my best friend picked me up from the Capitol and gave me a ride over there because I didn't have an easy way to get over and I needed to kind of be fairly quick about getting over and getting back. So I didn't actually stick around for most of it. I basically just went and spoke and more or less left after that. But I mean, I went to mostly talk about the upcoming referendum because that was something that was, of course, kind of ongoing at the same time, right? But it turned out to be, I mean, just since I was occupying the Capitol along with everybody else and I would come right from there and I was going right back, I talked for probably half the time or something about that, I think, and or at least... talked about that for sure. And I remember mentioning, like, you know, I just came from the Capitol, I've been sleeping over, and everybody, of course, is like, you know, everybody is very supportive of that and just like, yay, you know, kind of thing. So anyway, so I went and talked and I came back. And then later, so that afternoon was when this crackdown was supposed to happen, right? And I mean, it did to some degree happen, although differently than we'd imagined. And previously, the kind of union leaders group, as I've been calling it, had put a plan in place for... See, and I don't remember how long ago we knew, like before this, we actually knew that Sunday was the day, or we believed Sunday was the day, but there had been planning going on about, like, well, when we do get kicked out, there's probably going to be a mass arrest, but how are we going to do that in a way that, you know, is organized and, you know, dignified and all of the rest of that. And so they'd actually ordered these, like, gray, like, these matching T-shirts. I forget what they said, but they had red print on them, I know. And the idea was, like, all of the labor leader folks and kind of union, kind of key union people, not key, but people, kind of, to have a whole bunch of, like, I think they ordered, like, 200 of them or something, I forget. But, and the idea was, well, you know, spread these around to different union folks and then some other faith leaders and other folks like that, and then have this kind of be, and there was some, I mean, I was involved in planning how, you know, people should assemble and then, you know, like where, you know, spreading around the, I remember something about the upper level of the rotunda and saying this would make sense in terms of the visual and whatever, in terms of where people would be when the moment came or whatever. and I didn't actually end up, I didn't end up getting one of those shirts. I declined it because I felt a little weird being honestly, I mean, it's not that it was a bad idea, it's just I felt a little funny in the matching T-shirt thing, so I was like, no, somebody else can have you know, one instead of me, that's fine. So I actually, you know, ended up instead with like a Wisconsin 14 shirt that I think it was Melissa Sargent, if I'm not mistaken, gave her. I think it was her. I might be wrong, but there were like these green shirts that I think she or somebody, I think it was her, printed up a bunch of and was distributing to, you know, certain people. So I got one of those and wore that instead. But anyway, so we thought we were going to be arrested sometime around 4 p.m., right? And we kind of just milled around for a while. Like, there were a lot of people in the Capitol, and there's a lot of energy, I would say, kind of nervous energy, because we didn't know exactly what was going to happen. And so we were all kind of milling around, sitting around, talking, singing songs. I mean, I was up on the first floor, like in the rotunda, but the first floor, not the ground floor. And I think it's where almost all of us were, if I recall correctly. And I ended up just kind of going around and snapping a bunch of photos with friends because there wasn't a whole lot to really do for, you know, the first time in weeks. For a while, because we were just waiting, mostly. So we were singing and talking and whatever. And my friend Kevin Gunlock, I remember he was napping, because he was exhausted. So I got a photo of him, which is what I remember of that. But yeah, so we just kind of did that for a while. And then eventually, I mean, I think 4 p.m. came and went, as I recall. And then finally, at some point, it was announced that, okay, they're not arresting you after all, and everybody can go home and come back in the morning and all of that. And then they brought in pizza. Ian's Pizza, right? They got pizza, and everybody was like, okay, you know. So a lot of people left to go home and shower and whatever, because it had been announced that, you know, 8 p.m. tomorrow morning, the Capitol will be open again, and you can come back in then. And, I mean, honestly, I didn't really totally believe that. I mean, the idea of going home and, like, getting a shower sounded good, but I didn't want to leave because I was afraid that we weren't going to be able to get back in. And sure enough, that's exactly what happened. I mean, I was in because I didn't leave, but a diary I posted shortly after that, or I think it was when actually I interviewed with a friend, because I couldn't myself get online at that point, but I did a phone interview with a friend of mine, and he posted something. But at that time, I'd said in there was like something like 120 to 150 of us stayed the night, although I'm sure there's probably official estimates out there somewhere, but that was what I'd written down at the time as an estimate. And so, anyway, so I slept over. And then the beginning of the next day, when the doors didn't open, is what I was calling the lockdown period, the beginning of that. And that morning, I remember going into one of the bathrooms to brush my teeth, and it was just me in there, and there was like it was me and then this guy from building maintenance or something like that, right, with a bunch of tools and a little cart and stuff. And he was doing something to the window, and I was like, what are you doing? You know, and I forget exactly what he said, but I mean, I watched him, and what he was doing was he was putting bolts in the wind, like, you know, to keep the window from opening, and then sawing off the ends of those, or maybe they're screws, probably, but they were like metal things he was putting in there, and then cutting off the ends. And I mean, obviously the intention, presumably, I think that I asked him, what are you doing? Why are you doing it? And it was something about, oh, well, this is, I'm supposed to do this because we don't want the building to be damaged or something. But pretty obviously, some people probably wouldn't come in, move supplies in through the window or whatever. But obviously this is like a huge fire hazard, because what happens if there's a fire? You can't get out, you know, you've been locked into the building and the tips of the screws or whatever have been sawed off. So I left. I told an aide that I think I met right on the hallway or something. It was Malevsky's aide. I know that because I put her number in my cell phone after that. And I remember she said she'd look into it or whatever. I don't remember what happened with that, but I remember being a little bit worried about that. And let's see. So by Monday evening, so a day after most other people left, there were maybe like 100 people based on my previous estimate anyway, left inside the Capitol. So there weren't a lot. It seemed like there were more cops in there than people at that point, although I don't know if that was actually true. But that was definitely my impression. There were just a lot of police, and you felt like you were a few protesters left, and then there were all these cops just like there with you. And of course, it got harder to get supplies in, although we still managed. And we had, I think I already mentioned some of the meetings that we had, like in different offices, and trying to strategize about how to get things in there, and the conversation about the water and stuff like that. So we managed with that, although I wasn't the one leading that effort, so I couldn't say exactly the details of how that worked, but it worked. And of course, that day there were all these crowds outside that were demanding to get in and wanting to get in, and that continued because they were supposed to be able to get back in by, under Wisconsin law, you're supposed to be able to get back in. So, and at one time, I don't remember, I'm sure it's out there somewhere, but one of those days, I remember the Dems actually, like, I mean, they were, you know, they were supposed to be able to have constituents in for meetings and for, I think there's a hearing going on and what have you, and they themselves couldn't, like, I think they could get in, but they couldn't, like, bring their constituents in or whatever, and so at one point some of them moved their desks outside and were holding office hours, like, outside the building, which I remember thinking was kind of a good response to the situation, because it was so ridiculous. You couldn't, you know, you couldn't get, your constituents couldn't come in the building, so what are you going to do? Well, you know, let's do something honestly equally ridiculous but totally logical under the circumstances, mm-hmm. which is to move your desks outside. And anyway, so they did that, I remember. And I just remember looking out some of the windows, like, of Chris Larson's office in particular, I think, just because that was one of the ones we were in quite a bit. And just watching these huge crowds outside, just, like, chanting and, you know, whatever, and demanding to be let in. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe that wasn't Larson's office I was looking out of, but I was in there a lot, and I remember looking out of office windows and, like, just, like, wow, look at all those people, you know, kind of thing. Like, we're in here and they're out there. Another thing that happened that, I think it was that first night after the crackdown, so that would be Monday night, I think, was there was a tent city that was set up outside for people who wanted to get back in and couldn't, right? So a whole bunch of people brought tents and sleeping bags and whatever, and then the tents got taken away. I think it was some claim that you weren't allowed to have tents based on some, you know, camping rule or something. I can't remember what it was. But then there was a call that we put out. I mean, we being a very broad we, not just like me. There was a call put out to get blankets and you know, supplies for the people, because there were, like, I think about 50 people still out there, like, sleeping on the cold ground in February in Wisconsin without any tents. And I remember that was really amazing, because it got announced on the radio, and within, like, an hour or something, like, there were all these cars just, you know, clogging kind of, like, the Capitol Square, like, going around, and democra beeps and all of the rest, and people brought, like, all these blankets and, like, winter clothes and, like vats of hot cocoa and, like, all this stuff. And my friend Mindy Preston was one of the people out there, and she sent me a text, which I have here, saying, "We are so stocked out here, it's really amazing. I'm under about 6 blankets. I wish you guys were as comfortable." So, like, I mean, the response was just very heartwarming and just really immediate. And on the inside, there was, I mean, like I said, it was a very surreal kind of, I mean, the whole occupation was really surreal, honestly, but the lockdown period was, like, extra surreal in a way, because it was just, you know, it was you and the police and the media, and you're all kind of just there. And I mean, I was still, there were many meetings going on, so I wasn't just sitting around very much, but when you were kind of out in the rotunda or whatever, there was definitely this kind of weird vibe. And there are all these cameras on us, it felt like, all the time, almost. Like, Fox News had a live feed set up there, which, like, people were kind of, I don't know, like, Tessa, one of the people that was in the Tessa Echevarria, I'm not sure if I'm saying that right, but I remember she was, like, she made a sign and was sitting there in front of the live feed, like, advertising a rally later, like, "Hey, dear Fox viewers, come to our rally, like, love democracy," or something like that. And she sat there for a while with the sign just in front of the live feed. And, you know, we were singing, like, there were people in there singing. By that point, the Solidarity sing-along had not really officially started yet, but there were, I remember having songs that somebody had brought together in some kind of song sheet or whatever, and there was singing going on. At one point, a bunch of the firefighters from Local 311 came in and walked around. And, you know, so there were definitely some people coming in. It wasn't like the people that were in were the only people, but there, I think there was a one-out policy for a while, and then that kind of went away, and it was hard to get back in. And people could still sneak in to some degree as well. Like, that was still possible, because some people did. And then, I mean, there were still efforts going on with, like, cleaning, you know, the marshals, the volunteer marshals and volunteer cleaning crews kind of doing work in there. We had a little sort of media computer station thing set up where my computer just lived there after, you know, during that period because we didn't have that many computers in the building. But we didn't have internet, I don't think, at that point, so you had to kind of do stuff and then leave the building or get some other way of, you know, getting stuff actually posted. But we had that set up. And lots of meetings. There were some community kind of meetings in the rotunda itself, which were in front of all of the news coverage, so you couldn't really discuss anything sensitive there. There were also strategic meetings happening in various legislators' offices, including logistical supplies sort of oriented meetings as well as other types. There was at least one meeting with a couple of the people of what I would have been kind of referring to as that union leaders group. I remember Kim Workentine from America Votes, and maybe David Betcher, I'm not sure, but there were a few of us that met up in some legislator's office at one point, and I think that was during that period, if I'm not mistaken. I don't remember what the conversation was exactly, but I think it was during that period that they were in there, although maybe I'm wrong about that. And then that one police liaison meeting, or the one meeting with Officer Tubbs that I happened to be in on, I think it was just the one. I'm trying to remember, I don't think it was two, I think it was one. That one happened sometime in that general period. So there were various meetings happening as well. And one thing that I found interesting, and this is not just in that lockdown period, but it kind of became more obvious then, was the interaction with the police. I mean, so there was the Capitol Police, there were the state troopers, there were various sheriffs and others. There was a mix of police officers from different jurisdictions and different types there. And in general, they were really, I mean, you could kind of tell like most of them, well, you could tell most of them were pretty much on our side. Not all of them, but their behavior made it fairly clear, I think. A lot of times you have when new officers would end up there, they would be standoffish and kind of cold for like the first day or so, and then they'd kind of warm up and would start chatting with you and whatever. But they didn't usually actually say, hey, we support you. They were generally professional and did their job. But some of them actually did. There was one fellow I remember at one point that he was like, hey, are you guys like doing okay here? Like, okay on supplies and all of that? And I was like, yeah, I think we're so far so good. And he was like, okay, well, if you guys end up needing anything, let me know. I might be able to help you out. It was like one of the officers. And just, so it was just an interesting sort of interaction with a lot of the police. And there was one point when I was also like talking to some of a group of sheriffs, and they said that we were like the most peaceful large crowd that they'd ever policed. And this is not part of this particular thing, it was something I posted in, or that interview with my friend. But I remember like that interaction as well where, yeah, they were like, yeah, you guys have been so peaceful, like we haven't had to really do any sort of actual peacekeeping because you guys are taking care of it. People weren't rowdy. People were very helpful and peaceful. And, of course, we had the volunteer marshals, which I think a lot of the police actually did appreciate because we were, you know, doing our part to try to help keep things peaceful. And that wasn't just the lockdown period. That was before as well. But, just that sense of, the interaction with the cops is one of the things that, to me, stands out most about the occupation because so many events where there's protesters, it's just, that's not the dynamic. I remember especially, like, just as one example, but probably a somewhat extreme one, the 2003 FTAA, Free Trade Area of the Americas protest in Miami was kind of, like, one of my memories of the opposite extreme where the police chief was just very brutal kind of and unnecessarily not very friendly and helpful anyway, kind of the opposite. And just the contrast with how generally the police behaved during this whole thing was, and I mean, I think again a lot of it was that they were, I suspect anyway, that part of what was going on was in a lot of protest events, it's like the police, there's a mental idea that it's protesters versus police, like we're on one side, they're on the other kind of thing. And in this case, I think a lot of the police felt like we were on the same side. So that's probably a lot of what the difference was. And again, I've also mentioned, at least for the Capitol Police, I feel like Chief Tubbs, his leadership was really good as well, and I think that helped. So, okay, so Wednesday, that's March 2nd. That was the day of, or wait, it's Tuesday. No, I'm sorry, Tuesday should have, wait a second, Tuesday, Wednesday. I think it must have been Tuesday, yeah. The Walker's budget address. So was that March 1st? Well, I'm not sure. Whatever day the budget address was. That must have been March 1st. I'm forgetting. Anyway, though, there was a bunch of us. So most of us couldn't get into the chamber where he was giving the address. But there were, of course, still a bunch of us there. And we were all down below, I think on the ground floor. Maybe it was the first, just chanting really loudly, like, during his address. And reportedly, we could be heard up in the chamber, so that was kind of what we were going for. So we were successful in that way. Like, we were pretty loud. And there were people, though, that were that did end up in the chamber. There were a bunch, like, pretty much all the seats for the public were filled, as I understand, by a bunch of right-wing activists that were bussed in. And escorted up there, I think I remember watching them being escorted up there, but they definitely got up there, so I think they were just brought in the usual way. And there were some people, about 20, I think, that were, like, handpicked from the crowd of protesters, like, inside the Capitol. I think probably because Walker wanted to be able to claim that the general public was also part of, you know, allowed in there to, like, listen to his address. I'm not sure, but that's my guess. And they were each given, like, tickets, apparently, and, like, kind of herded inside. One person claimed to not even know exactly where they were being taken. They were just, like, kind of, I think it was, my understanding was they were kind of, like, hand-picked, kind of older, more clean-cut looking protesters or whatever. And this is secondhand because I got this from, I interviewed a few people after this ended and wrote down notes and then kind of assembled it so that to put up a diary outside so that I could let people outside of Wisconsin know what was going on. So I myself was not up in the chamber. But according to the people I talked to, like, right afterwards, there were, like, some chairs that were put up in the back row that were, like, folding chairs, and they were apparently surrounded by state troopers and just watched really closely the whole time. And they weren't allowed to react, like, at all, although all of the right-wing, you know, supporters that were in the normal seats were all cheering and clapping and everything. And the people back in the back there weren't allowed to do anything. They weren't allowed to, like, say anything or really anything. And at one point near the end of the address, everybody else is, like, cheering and whatever and wildly. And several of the protesters that were up there were arrested. One, I guess, stood up and kind of booed a bit. And some others just stood up and didn't do anything besides stand up. But they stood up and then they were told, okay, you know, you have to leave now. And there was one woman that said she protested and said, well, but I'm not, you know, what am I? I think there were actually some people that were right near those people that stood up and stuff too that weren't even doing anything. And she's like, but I'm not doing anything. I have a ticket. I want to stay. And then with the cop that was near her just kind of twisted her arm behind her back so it was painful and, like, just basically manhandled her and took her out of the chamber. And one of the women got her jacket left behind, I guess, and I assume that they probably brought it along, but she asked apparently if, you know, somebody could bring her jacket, and the cop's just like, no. And they wouldn't tell. Another person said that they wouldn't tell her why she was being arrested. She's like, well, why am I being arrested? And they just wouldn't tell her. So it was just, like, really this, you know, really kind of almost caricature-ish behavior of, you know, bring in all these supporters, and then we'll bring in some people from the general public, but then they're obviously there just to be props, and if they actually try to react at all, they're, we're not going to tolerate that kind of thing. So, yeah. Anyway, so that was that. And then that, the evening of March 2nd, I think it was the evening, yeah, the day before the occupation ended, I left the Capitol that day. I was planning on returning the next day, but I had a friend from out of town, from New York, a union activist from New York, my friend Lenny, coming for a few days because he wanted to come and also, you know, see the occupations and whatever and be part of this. And so he was coming in the next day, and so I wanted to be out to meet him, and I also really needed a shower by that point because I hadn't had one in, whatever, 3 or 4 days or whatever it was. And I had some other business I needed to take care of too. Like, I needed to be able to get online and answer some things and whatever. But I was planning on coming back the next day, and I'd already, like, arranged, you know, we kind of were talking about, okay, I guess there might have been still some in-one-out policy. I can't quite remember, because I remember having a discussion and arranging, like, okay, well, when I come back tomorrow, you know, who's going to kind of leave so I can come back in? And there was kind of, you know, there were people that were kind of trying to coordinate that. So on Wednesday, March 3rd anyway, whichever day that was, when my friend Lenny got in that afternoon on the bus, and I met him there, and anyway, and all that. And then the protesters, like, ended up actually leaving the Capitol that day. Like, they ended up, the people that were still occupying it ended up, deciding to leave. And they kind of, at that point, more or less had to at some point, but they decided to all march out together. And so that's what happened. And I wasn't obviously inside when that happened. But, I mean, I heard about it pretty much immediately that it was happening, and met up with all of those folks right afterwards at the Brokaw Irish pub that's, like, right on the Capitol Square. So, you know, and it was a really kind of emotional, I remember, time, because we were all out on the outside, you know, together. And the occupation at that point was over, and just there'd been a lot of discussion up to that point about how, you know, when it does come time to leave, how will that be accomplished in a way that's dignified, and, you know, what's your exit strategy kind of thing. And I think that, you know, that ended up working out pretty well, as far as I could tell. So, I mean, the space, we held the space for a very long time. And when people left, it was in a dignified and, you know, appropriate way. So I thought that was, that worked out well. And I don't know how that final decision of leaving was made, because I wasn't there.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, so do you want me to just keep going, or?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So after the occupation ended, the referendum campaign was still going on, because the April election was when the South Central Wisconsin Move to Mend referendum was on the ballot. Well, two of them really on the ballot. And so I kind of dove back into that electioneering work, the election publicity work and that sort of thing, lit drops, coordinating that, being involved with that anyway. I think I wasn't the main one certainly coordinating that, but I did my part, and reaching out to different groups and what have you. And we did some events as well. I mean, I remember one, like a St. Patrick's Day parade around the Capitol Square, that we had a bunch of people from the occupation, actually, who were like, you know, we kind of handed out like Move to Mend kind of t-shirts, and we were all kind of in this parade together. And then also in the middle of March, we'd put on a human corporate wedding in the High Noon Saloon, like an event where we had a skit with, where we had a human bride that married a corporate groom, and democracy came in and objected to the wedding and was drug out by, you know, kind of corporate persons, sort of lackeys, cronies, whatever. So anyway, that was kind of fun, and had some organizing, obviously, that went into that. There were also a bunch of things that kind of kept going on that were occupation-related afterwards. I mean, there were rallies that were ongoing, certainly. And by that point, the budget was also out, right? So, or the budget, you know, had been kind of, the basic budget had been proposed. The governor had proposed what he wanted to do. So there was stuff going on around that. And there were a series of different rallies, too. There was one on March 5th, I think, that I remember that one mostly because I was really sick that day, and I had agreed to speak about the upcoming referendum, and I was just really sick, and I hadn't had a chance to really prepare. I kind of took an hour before it was time to leave and put together an outline with some thoughts. And my friend Ben Mansky, who is one of the ones organizing it, had said, oh, yeah, you know, we should have a podium. Like, you can, because I think I'd asked, I have a way to read my notes. Like, can I just have something to refer to? And he basically said, yes, I think. But then when I got there, there was no podium, and I walked up there, and I hadn't had a chance to actually memorize the speech in any way. So, and I was, again, really sick and tired and, like, whatever. And I think it might have even been raining or whatever, but it was cold for sure. And I walked up there, and I was like, oh, there's no podium. I'll just hold my notes, I guess. And Ben was like, you don't need those. You can do without those. So he, like, grabbed them out of my hand. I was like, all right. So I was, just up there saying whatever the heck I said. I don't even know what it was. And I was sick and kind of slightly delirious. And then halfway through that speech, I remember there was, like, this big old commotion down. We were at the King Street side, and there was this big old commotion with, like, fire, like, bagpipes and stuff happening down by the street and kind of coming towards me. I was trying to, like, keep talking, but trying to figure out what was going on. And I guess that Michael Moore was speaking at that rally, and he'd arrived, and through whoever's initiative, I don't know, had ended up with this, like, parade of firefighters and their bagpipes going on, and, like, which I found, honestly, kind of annoying, but, I mean, I can't say that whose idea it was or anything, but I found it a little annoying just because I was already having some trouble figuring out what the heck I was saying. But, I mean, whatever, people were applauding, and I guess whatever I said made some kind of sense. So, yeah. And then there were some other rallies that happened, too. There was a Vets for Peace one that I spoke at, and some other rallies that were happening. I met at a different rally on the other side of the Capitol, and met Sarah Goldrick Rabb for the first time, who is a professor here at the university, and who I actually have done some... I'm working on some academic stuff with her at this point, and we've worked together on different things. But that was also the first time I met her. So there were kind of like these series of rallies and things happening that were kind of ongoing from the occupation, and certainly talking about the upcoming recall and, you know, all of this kind of stuff, the budget and all that. On, I think it was March 9th, and let's see, Wednesday, March 9th. That's when the Senate vote happened, and it was kind of like a surprise on the budget bill. And there were just people that, like, flooded back to the Capitol, as I recall. That, I think, was also the evening, if I'm not mistaken, that we actually did an occupation of the bathroom. Because we were, so there were a whole bunch of people in the Capitol, and the police started closing the women's bathrooms one by one. And to us, that seemed like a pretty obvious ploy to get us to leave, because at some point, you need to use the bathroom, and if there aren't any, well, you're going to have to go elsewhere, and then they can just not let you back in. So a few of us women said, this is not good. So we went and we sat down in the entrance to the bathroom and refused to leave. And the police tried to ask us to leave. And we said, no, we're going to stay here. Thank you very much. You can arrest us if you want, but we're not leaving. And they ended up just like letting us be there. And that kept the bathroom open, I think. And so, you know, that was good. And so I have like, yeah, these memories of like occupying, of all the things that I've occupied, I guess, well, I don't know if there's a lot of things, but of the things I've occupied in my life, that was probably one of the more ridiculous ones. It was, I think, good that we did, because I think otherwise that was, I think, the only bathroom left open by the time we were done. So, yeah, as far as I remember, anyway. And then, of course, the assembly ended up passing, like, I think it was, the next day, maybe, or something, and there was civil disobedience that happened outside the assembly chamber as well, with people that went limp and had to be, you know, moved out by police. And I was in the conversation around that. I personally, I didn't participate in that. I wasn't sure it was going to, the wisdom of it, based on what the reaction would be. I mean, I wasn't, like, trying to convince them not to, but I wasn't totally convinced it was a good idea either. So I sat that one out. But, I mean, it definitely got some media coverage, and I think that was generally a positive thing. So I think that it was a good thing that people ended up doing that. Yeah, and then I guess there's just, like, other events that happen in the... I mean, like, there was the rally with the tractors, of course, which I'm sure other people have mentioned, when the farmers came in with the tractors. And that was... I remember that just being kind of... thinking that was really cool to have all these tractors around the Capitol. There was a zombie lurch in the beginning of April on a Saturday also that was, like, around the, like, Governor Walker. I forget what exactly what the theme was, but... and so I went and, you know, wore one of my AF t-shirts and, you know, made a couple of zombie-related signs. We're not that easy to kill, and zombies are the world awaken, and things like that. And other people were doing the same. There were lots and lots of, like, signs relating to Walker and where are your brains or things like that. Like, that was a common theme. But again, that's just back to that. I think the importance of humor and, you know, doing something that's different and kind of fun, and it's not all the same protesting sort of thing all the time. So I thought that was kind of cool. And then, like, in the months that followed, I mean, there were various, I think a number of us that were involved in the Capitol occupation too were kind of invited to different places to speak about it. And I went and spoke to some union members down in Chicago, and I was invited to New York by some folks over there also, and went and, like, talked about that over there and etc. And so there were, and I remember a church in Milwaukee at one point going and speaking to the congregation there because I was asked to go. And I think there were a number of us that were kind of doing that kind of thing in the months afterwards too, where it's like, oh, you were involved in that. Like, we want to hear about that. There was a group called Wisconsin Wave as well that Ben Mansky set up. And so I ended up on this action committee there that was like organizing this Wisconsin People's Assembly. And I forget if it was in like April maybe or May or something like that. So that was kind of a thing also that was going on and that was taking some time. Should I stop?
Well, I'm just going to...
I feel like I'm just sort of listing
stuff.
Well,
yeah, I was going to ask if this is the point now where the Solidarity Singers...
So the sing-along, and it's... So the sing-along, they generally... prefer, and I don't think this has probably changed, prefer to be called the Solidarity Sing-Along. I'm not entirely sure why, but they don't like Solidarity Singers. They feel like that's not correct. So just for that of the record. The Sing-Along formed in early to mid-March, like right after, like a week or two after the occupation ended, I believe. I was not involved in that formation. I wasn't aware of it, as far as I remember. I mean, I knew it was happening within, I don't know, some period of time after that, because I knew people were going and singing and stuff, and I went a few times to sing, but it wasn't actively, you know, an active part of that until really the crackdown in the summer of 2013.
Okay.
So that's when I really, and I can talk more about that, although I think I might loop back to that later just because I was jumping ahead a little.
Yeah, I guess, I know you talked about it. I didn't realize that it was actually, you know, two years later that when you really became involved in it. So yeah,
they'd been singing for all that time, but I just wasn't, you know, I had other things that I was doing, and I supported the fact that they were there and singing, and I thought they had the right to sing there, but I wasn't going every day and singing myself, so.
Okay. So then another question that I have, it's a question I ask people all the time. I know you say this has sort of melded together into one big thing, but maybe specifically about the days that you were in after they locked it down.
Yeah.
And you've alluded to this in your what you've been talking about, but what was a typical day?
Well,
do you remember of a typical day, the days that you were actually locked in and couldn't get out of the Capitol?
Yeah, and the typical day, I mean, there were really just, I think, 3 days, right, really, even though it felt way longer than that. But it was really the 28th of February. I don't think there was a 29th that year, although maybe I'm wrong.
No.
And then the first and the second, and then I wasn't there for the third, so I can't speak to that part, right? So that's really like a typical day would be like one of those 3 days, presumably.
Mm-hmm. If you wanted to broaden it out to...
I can talk about what the experience was.
Right, you were there a lot.
Yeah,
I mean,
well,
days you were there all the time, but you were there almost all the time all the other days.
That's also true, yeah. I mean, there were some coming and going, but I was there certainly the vast majority of it. During the lockdown period, it was, there was a lot of running around for me anyway, just because, again, meetings, like there were tons of meetings of different kinds in different places, and so I felt like a lot of it was that sort of thing. I guess I'm trying to figure out exactly what I should say about it. I mean, I already think I said how weird it kind of felt to be in there. I mean, one thing that's been, I remember hearing discussed was that it really smelled bad in there, which I didn't ever notice, even when I had left and come back earlier on. You know, this wasn't during the lockdown period, but I never noticed that, honestly. And maybe it's just that my sense of smell isn't that good, but I never noticed that. But I heard some other people comment on that. Even though we were trying to keep things as clean as we could, we were still a bunch of people in a closed space for an extended period of time, so it's not that surprising. I remember being very tired because I'm not very good at sleeping anyway, and the floor was pretty cold and hard. And at some point, I acquired, or I shouldn't say acquired, because there was kind of like a... So really early on, you can leave like your sleeping bag and stuff up in the TA's warm room, and when you went to go get it, it was generally there and everything, but... Later on, after that was closed down, there was a sleeping bag area kind of thing, like at a side of the ground floor rotunda, kind of like near one of the walls. And the way that worked, as I recall, was that you'd leave your stuff there and then you would come back and get your sleeping bag or whatever, but if you didn't come by a certain, I forget if it was a certain time or what, then they might give your supplies to somebody else for the night so that, you know, somebody else could use it. And I did have some couple times. I remember one time that, like, I went and my sleeping bag wasn't there, and I was like, well, I need something to sleep on, and ended up going and trying to figure out where, and I can't remember exactly, that wasn't during the lockdown, that was sometime earlier, I think. And I eventually found it, like, where somebody else was, like, you know, sleeping under it, and I remember feeling bad, but being like, I think they were sleeping on something else, and I was like, well, I kind of need a sleeping bag. So I was like, can I have this part back, and you can keep that part, kind of thing. This is the bag that I used to put the sleeping bag in. I think that was the night that went missing, so I still have it in, like, a shopping bag, because I, you know, didn't have that. I also had a comforter there, which also went missing. Like, there were a lot of kind of things like that that you brought in, and then you didn't really leave with, which, whatever, but, you know, so. But the sleeping thing was hard, certainly. I mean, I would use earplugs and, you know, put something over my face to keep the light out, but it was still not the most restful time, which is probably why by that rally that I mentioned, by the time of that one that I was really sick at, that's probably one of the reasons I was sick, because I was really run down, hadn't been sleeping well, and, you know, I mean, I don't remember being, people actually getting really sick in the Capitol, which is a little surprising, actually. I can't say that nobody did, but I don't remember that being a thing. Which is good, that nobody came down with anything awful and spread it to everybody else, right?
That is a universe, and I wouldn't say completely universal, but a lot of the people that I've interviewed or that others have interviewed, like, sometime soon after they stopped going every day, they got sick, and it was...
Yeah. Well, that's like not too surprising, because we were pretty stressed and run down, and we'd been exposed to stuff, and sometimes it's also... I mean, biologically, I'm not really sure why that seems to happen, but, like, I remember when I was in college and would... just put in these really intense study periods around finals time, and then it was always, like, right after finals, like, right as soon as it was done, and I went, you know, back to my folks' place or something for the holiday, and then that's, like, when I get sick, just right then. So it was kind of similar, it seemed like, timing-wise. Another thing that came out of, and I don't know if you've talked to somebody from this, because I can't say all that much about it, but there was a group that came out of what I would call the Capitol community called the Autonomous Solidarity Organization, ASO, which is still actually around and doing stuff. I don't think they've even changed their name, although I might be wrong about that. But they've, that same group is organized and continues to organize, like, Santas Without Chimneys program that collects toys and books and things for homeless children and then distributes those every Christmas. So, and that's, like, this big thing to coordinate. So they've been doing, I mean, good work since. But that came, they came out of the occupation. And and would meet over for a while in the United Council office that was, like, I don't know if they always met there, but they sometimes met there. That's over kind of near the Capitol Square, and would plan different things. And I mean, it was a really vibrant, kind of cool group of different activists. There was one fellow who did a lot of artistic stuff and printed up a lot of shirts, one of which I still have. And at one point, Jesse Jackson came for a rally or whatever, and he met with the ASO, and, I mean, I was there too, because I was also involved with the ASO, although not as a core person, but kind of in the, you know, in the kind of bigger group, I guess, or whatever, and he came in, I remember, spoke to us in the United Council office and talked about whatever it was, and anyway, so there, that was a good group, and I mean, among other people, people that were involved with that included, like, Erica Wolf, who I mentioned before, CJ and Damon Terrell were both involved with that, and I mean, a good number of other folks as well, but they were pretty much people that I would consider part of that Capitol community crowd, and hence the autonomous, right? Like, autonomous being not, we're not from a particular labor union or particular group, we're kind of this other group of people, but we care, and mostly these were quite a bit of, for the most part, younger folks and et cetera. So, but yeah, they've done some really good work and whatnot. Yeah, and there was other stuff that kind of came out. I'm not sure. Should I move on to, like, because there was more move to amend stuff, like there was a Wisconsin, like, Dems resolution, stuff like that, but I imagine you probably don't want to really hear about that as much as the uprising related stuff.
But it's at the same time, right?
This is all kind of mixed together at this point.
So it's all spring of
2011. Yeah, like, I mean, in my life it's mixed together, but in terms of, like, from a perspective of somebody that cares more about the uprising, I mean, some of this stuff isn't as related because...
True.
So, but, I mean, I can kind of not...
Well,
I can quickly mention.
I mean, do you feel you're at a point where you have said what you want to say about the uprising and the protests. How about we ask it that way?
Yeah, maybe if you have any. I mean, I've kind of gone through what I outlined for myself, but there's a lot more stuff I could say about it, depending on what.
Okay.
And depending on which details I fully remember at this point versus not. But, I mean, I have a lot of memories of how kind of things felt and visual images and that sort of thing. So, and could say more about organizing stuff as well. If you have any questions, I'd be happy to.
Well, why don't we bookmark or whatever that for a bit? Because I think you've answered sort of the general questions I have, but I do want to make sure. And maybe we will do this in a final session. Make sure if there are things you just feel like you want to say.
Okay.
Again, whether it's about images or more about organization.
Yeah.
But since it's on our mind and it's of the time period, why don't we talk a bit more about Move to Amend in the spring?
Okay.
And then let's see where we're at time-wise after that.
That sounds fine. Yeah. And by images and stuff, I just mean I've got memories, right?
Right.
But like, they're not all necessarily organized.
Right.
And I've tried to organize as much as I could kind of put in order as I reasonably could, but I'm sure there's plenty of other stuff that's not, you know, that I haven't talked about.
Mm-hmm.
So let's see. So yeah, I mean the referendum in the spring, I mean it ended up going quite well. We were concerned about especially the Dane County referendum, as I think I mentioned before, because we had done quite a bit of work with our signature gathering campaign and what have you in Madison previously, but then in like the tail end of 2010, the very beginning of 2011, right around then, the county board decided to put a version of the referendum on the countywide ballot, and then we were trying to do this weird, like, vote yes twice campaign, but you might only see it once, and if you do vote yes once, and it was this weird kind of thing. So we were doing a lot of just outreach of a lot of different kinds. Like, we were doing radio interviews and coordinating with different groups, like doing lit drops and piggybacking on lit drops that local candidates, you know, because this was a spring election, so different candidates that were friendly to the cause that we were working on would agree to take lit out with their people, so that helped us. And we did some of our own lit drops as well, but that was more the piggybacking, really, and coordinating that and talking to different groups and whatever. I mean, there was just a lot of stuff going on around that. And so, you know, we were trying really hard to get the word out. And again, like a lot of that stuff that I was talking at rallies, that was pretty much what I was talking about at those rallies for the most part was, hey, we've got this referendum coming up and it's the first thing that's, you know, this is a historic thing, you know, kind of talking about it that way because nobody's done this. And now, of course, a lot of other communities have, but at the time nobody had. And yeah, so that was a lot of, and I forget, like, exactly, I mean, funding and work-wise, I know I was, like, doing some stuff, you know, around that still with both of the entrepreneurship-related stuff I mentioned for my PA-ship and then also grading. I think that was that semester that I was also grading, unless it was the previous. I'm pretty sure it was that semester I was doing, like, grading for a class as well. So I was fitting that stuff in, you know, as well. So I was just really busy. That's what it kind of came down to. And so that spring election was also the one where there was a Supreme Court race. Kloppenburg was running on which is a progressive candidate. So a lot of people were trying to get her elected too. And the issues, I mean, there were so many connections you could draw between the money and politics issue and everything else that was happening. So a lot of what we were doing, I think, was trying to kind of connect the dots. And it wasn't very hard. I mean, a lot of people on the ground in Wisconsin got that, I think. And could see that, you know, all of the influence of money and the fallout from the Citizens United decision and just all of this. I mean, like the whole, like Walker's recall later too, you saw all this money come in from outside of Wisconsin and everywhere else. And so, let's see. So the election itself, I mean, the referendum results were good. We got really high percentages of people that voted yes for both of them, higher in Madison than in Dane County, but basically in places they were both on the ballot, we got about a 1% higher on average vote yes for the Madison one. So clearly some people voted yes for Madison and not no on the Dane County one, which was what we were hoping to avoid, but whatever. But yeah, so we got, like, you know, that ended up turning out pretty well. It was at, like, the Kloppenburg's victory, you know, quote-unquote victory party, which obviously didn't end up being exactly a victory party. that evening of the election, and I remember being there for, I'm not sure how long, an hour or two or something, and then realizing suddenly that we'd forgotten to actually put together like a press release to say that this the referendum had passed. And so I, at that point, basically ran home and wrote up a press release and sent it out. And we got, I mean, honestly, the stuff that got media coverage, though, was almost, it was the Kloppenburg race, the other spring election stuff, whatever, but we got basically no media coverage on these referenda. And this was something that our local group felt, and I know a number of people felt kind of gypped on, because it's like we put on all this effort, we got these like amazing results, and it seemed like nobody in the media cared. And I mean, later on there was stuff that would refer back to this, other things that people wrote. Like, I mean, one local individual who had been very supportive was John Nichols, and so he definitely would write about this and talk about it. And that was true before the election too, I believe, because I mean, he definitely cares about this issue and understands it really well and all that. But in terms of like right after the election, there really wasn't coverage to speak of. And since then, in other similar referenda work that we've done since here and in other states, we've gotten much more coverage, and it's kind of built as more of these things pile up, we end up getting more coverage. Plus, it helps to not wait until that night to put together a press release and then end up calling around and trying to figure out who, you know, you can actually quote in the press release, because that's what I was doing. I was like trying to find people that were still up that I could get a hold of. Hey, like, can I quote you? And here is, you know, so it was not the way you should really do things, but it's just one of those things, like you're doing such a huge push and then suddenly you realize, shoot, I forgot something, you know? So, but yeah, so that ended up working out, I think, pretty well. And then after that, there was, we then were still trying to get more resolutions in different, I mean, I mentioned the Wisconsin Democratic Party passed a resolution that summer, basically in favor of this. And I ended up also in the Platform and Resolutions Committee of the State Democratic Party from that, and I'm still on it, actually. I mean, just from being involved in that experience. Although I'm not, by and large, I'm not all that involved with, like, the Democratic Party politics. That's never really been a big thing that I do, but I have done the Platform and Resolutions Committee thing. There were kind of, again, the Move to Mend folks, and, like, Ben Mansky and other people involved with Move to Mend and other kind of allied groups put on a couple of, a democracy convention, they called it, the summer after the occupation. And that was here in Madison. And there was actually two. There was one that was like, 2 years later, I want to say. But that was the first one. And so I ended up giving some trainings and stuff there on lobbying and on citizen lobbying and on media work. And I actually went to visit a friend of mine who lives in Hawaii, who's a friend from high school, like my only real good friend that I still have from high school. And we visit back and forth every now and again. And I went for like a quote unquote vacation for like, it was like two and a half weeks. It was some incredibly long time, and I was really excited about it. And then I spent like the first week and a half, I think it was, working like, I don't know, like quite a lot of hours. Maybe it was like 2 weeks, and it was the first week I spent, I forget. But I was like, he had this house like right basically on the north coast of Oahu, like on the beach, and I could like see the ocean outside and see the sea turtles like paddling by. And I was sitting there on my computer for like 10, 12 hours a day, like working on trying to finish these things for the Democracy Convention and some other work that I'd had left over and whatever. And so I remember doing that, and then when I finally got that done and sent it off, I was like, oh, now I can do vacation. So we, you know, had like a week left to cram and everything. We did all kinds of things. It was great, but it wasn't the most relaxing, because we were just trying to do all these things that we hadn't done the first whatever week, right, or what have you. But yeah, so that the Democracy Convention was a time that we came together, and there was quite a bit of discussion of the uprising at that, as there were in almost any kind of, you know, such gatherings. I think in the aftermath, or whatever you want to call it, of the uprising, and as the recall stuff was going on, and after that, there was a lot of conversation about the uprising and what it meant, and, you know, how we could continue the effort and what would happen in the future, and like all kinds of things, right? So this was like ongoing. And the recall itself, like, I wasn't all that involved with. I mean, partly just because I needed to do other stuff. Like, I had these two huge, you know, there's the uprising and all of this referendum related stuff that had eaten up so much of my time for like the previous, I mean, a large part of the previous year, actually, but at least the previous, you know, 6 months or whatever. And so while I got some work certainly done during that time, it wasn't, I mean, I owed quite a lot of hours on my PA-ship and other stuff. And so I did not do a lot on the recall. I did go out and gather some signatures. I mean, that's true, but I definitely didn't do a ton in that. And so I was kind of watching that kind of a little bit removed as that process was going on. And I mean, sometimes you kind of have to just be like, I'm stepping back now and other people are going to do this. And I did something before and I'll do something again. But right now I need to step back a little. And that's what I did. Of course, the actual election didn't go the way that many of us were hoping. The recall election, that is. Mm-hmm. And right after that, I can't remember if this was Cap Times or which publication this was, but I remember there was somebody put together an article that was basically a bunch of short reactions by different kind of community leaders or community whoever, people from across the community. And somebody asked me for my reaction. That was the evening of the recall election. And it was like, well, can you write something up really quick, like a few paragraphs and send it in or whatever? And so I did that. And I focused on the role of money in politics and that sort of angle. But I remember when it came out, so at my job, I work at a consulting firm, and one of the guys there who's conservative actually had also a piece in that same little thing, and it was kind of funny because he had kind of he's a very nice guy, I like him a lot, but it was funny because they weren't really opposed because I don't think mine was all that partisan anyway, but it was kind of talking about the role of money in politics and how this was sort of a reflection of that, and his view was kind of different in that. So it's interesting kind of how, you know, a lot of times you think Madison, oh, well, everybody here agrees with what I think, but that's not actually true. There's people here who do have, some people anyway, who do have rather different views on all of this than I do anyway. But,
so we're close to an hour.
Yeah.
I think
this might be a good place to end for today.
And then, and then obviously we'll set up one more session and we will talk about some of the things that you haven't yet talked about that you think sort of directly spin off of the uprising. And then we'll probably talk a little bit about how it's, for lack of a better word, affected you in the 4+ years now since it's been over.
Has it been that long? Four plus? Well, three plus?
February, March 2011 to September 2015.
Wow.
Yeah. So this concludes this oral history session. So thank you, Kaya, for your time.
Yeah, no problem.